You are Locked On MLB Prospects, part of the Locked On Podcast Network. And here's your host, Aram Layton.
This is Locked On MLB Prospects, your go-to podcast on the future stars of Major League Baseball. As always, I'm your host, Aram Layton. I'm a prospect writer and analyst, as well as the founder of JustBaseball.com. And in today's episode, we have part two of the Orioles farm system rundown. Really excited to get through the back half of this top 10, I would say back third or so, as well as a little bit on the honorable mentions. And I'm going to briefly give a little bit of an Arizona Fall League update as well, if we have some time at the end, because there is a lot going on over there. Jeter Downs starting to swing it, which makes me very happy. Somebody that I've been very high on for a long time and has really just had a terrible 2021, but starting to turn it around there. I want to talk about some of the things I've seen with Downs and just the Arizona Fall League in general, which I'm really hoping I can fit in some time to get out there. I'm going to try to go to the World Series as well. So might be an action-packed couple of weeks, but it is all good action. I just came back from Boston as well for that ALCS game, which was a ton of fun. Got to see Framber Valdez go 8 innings. He was spectacular, pitching to contact, getting ground balls like he does, and it's just been so much fun watching this postseason and covering it for JustBaseball.com on the major league level as well. But of course, you know, I got to get my prospect fix in, and we're going to be back to daily podcast here on the Locked On MLB Prospects podcast. It was a lot of sorting out to do between all of the things I had going on with Just Baseball, and not to bore you with it all, but I wanted to be transparent because I appreciate you listening and sticking with me here, and I'm going to be back to a daily schedule. I've been able to kind of figure it all out and how I'm going to navigate everything. Really excited for what I have going on over at JustBaseball.com, but I'm also really proud of what we've built here and thankful for you as a listener, and want to keep this show going and churning and moving along here as the listens just continue to go up. It's just been so much fun to be able to talk prospects with you over the last year plus now, and having these interviews as well. And this is just something I look forward to every day. So I'm really pumped to get back on that daily schedule. And if you enjoy the show, please, if you have a moment, I'd really appreciate it if you could take a second to leave a rating, let me know how I'm doing. And of course, it helps me immensely with visibility of the podcast as well. Without any further delay, let's get back into actually talking about baseball, what you're here for, not my life story. So let's jump into it and get into this Orioles system, the back half here, where I believe in last episode, I should have double checked, but I know I left off on Jordan Westberg, which kind of leads me into Heston Kjerstad here, as I just recall. So Kjerstad, somebody I wish I could talk about his first professional season. I wish I could talk about it, but unfortunately, he had been dealing with some serious issues, myocarditis, as you may have heard or seen the reports on. And fortunately, Kjerstad's getting back to baseball activities. He posted a video back in September of him hitting for the first time in a very long time, just taking some easy batting practice. But even that was a huge win and a great sign from the second overall pick in the 2020 draft. And yes, Kjerstad was an underslot guy, and I've not been as high on him as some of the other college bats in that class. That being said, still a really good prospect with a strong track record of hitting, and I was excited to see what he would do because he's one of those players that you have your concerns, maybe a little bit about his mechanics, about the way he hits, but he always hits. And once he starts doing it at the pro level, you can't really question it anymore. So I was looking forward to seeing him potentially do that. And I still think that he is going to be able to hit the way he does. When I was going into these in-depth write-ups on each of the prospects in this system, I watched more open side video of Kjerstad and really just dissected it from all angles. I probably took as much time looking at Heston Kjerstad's swing as I did anybody on this list. And what I started to realize is that these movements are super repeatable for him. And hitting is so individualistic, right? I always say how it's so important not to cookie cut hitting. And I even think to a degree I was guilty of it. When I look at Kjerstad, I'm thinking those are unorthodox moves. Those are really hard to repeat, but maybe that's hard to repeat for me. It's not hard to repeat for Heston Kjerstad, and he has shown that time and time again, whether it's his track record of hitting in college for Team USA or even dating all the way back to his high school days. He's a big physical dude at 6'3", 215 pounds, and has the present strength. Obviously, we have to see how that strength looks when he comes back hopefully coming back soon in time for the 2022 season. I don't expect him to have lost all of his strength. I know he couldn't have been too active with myocarditis, but we saw Eduardo Rodriguez with the Red Sox come back and look a lot better on the mound this year. He had an up and down season, but you didn't really see any issues physically or any hiccups there. His velo was strong, so hopefully the same will be true for Heston Kjerstad. But to get back into the hitting mechanics there, what I noticed with him is that where he loads his hands to actually seems like a very natural and comfortable place for him to get slotted, and it allows him to stay on a pretty even plane to the ball. He has easy, natural lift, but also isn't really selling out for poolside power. It seems like he would be with the way that his bat path looks like it's going through the zone, but when you look through slow motion and you look through different angles of the swing, he gets his hand slotted into a low, comfortable spot, and the barrel actually lives through the zone, and he's able to get easy lift, but he's not really selling out for that pull side. His barrel still stays pretty flat relative to what it looks like in fast motion, and he's got power to all fields. He's got plus raw power. He has a good feel to hit, and there's definitely a lot to be excited about here with Kjerstad. He would be probably higher up. I might even have him above Jordan Westberg at this point if he had played last year, but he didn't, obviously, and has a lot to answer in regards to what he can do on the field, not only just because of the health issues he had, but we never really saw him play professional baseball yet. So I still had my questions as to how his hit tool would translate to the professional level. I think it should translate pretty well, but I want to see how he hits lefties. I want to see how he handles hard stuff inside. There's a lot of things I do want to see from him, and I'm looking forward to hopefully seeing that in 2022. But there's no debating his college numbers. I mean, his numbers at Arkansas were just frankly absurd. And that's in the SEC, right? That's good pitching. 343, 421, 590 slash line in his college career. 37 homers, 129 runs batted in 150 games. Think about that. That's 12 games less than an MLB season, and 129 driven in is just unreal. 37 jacks, fantastic as well. Doesn't K a ton, walks a decent amount, but you typically see that from middle of the order hitters in college. They're not going to get pitched to as much, so I want to see how that translates to the professional level as well. I still have Kowser ahead of him. He has more power, does Kjerstad, than Kowser, but I love Kowser's tools. Where Kjerstad, he can be an above average defender at either corner. He moves well enough. He's got a good arm, but I like Kowser's chances to stick in center. There's a lot more value there. While Kjerstad has more power, Kowser is an above average runner, and I think will grow into more power. Remember, they're both 6'3". Kjerstad has a wider frame, but Kowser has a lot more room to add strength. And frankly, there's few hit tools in all of the minor leagues that I have more confidence in than Colton Kowser. So not an indictment as much on Heston Kjerstad as it is just confidence in Kowser. I think after this professional season, if Kjerstad had put up, let's say, just solid numbers and played this year through A-ball, I still would probably lean Colton Kowser. That's how much I like what I saw from him. But if Kjerstad comes out and absolutely just mashes baseballs in 2022, then it's a moot point. And he's going to be somebody that's quickly going to rise up the prospect rankings and somebody that I know is on radars and everybody wants to see what he can do when he finally does come back. I do have some concern about how much of that power will actually translate with Wood. We'll have to find out. I do have that JJ Bleday just thought in the back of my head. Will he end up similar to Bleday, a left-handed hitter who really came into his own towards the end, although Kjerstad kind of hit all the way through? Two left-handed hitters with unorthodox swings and seemed like very safe bets out of college. Kjerstad has more of the track record, so I'm not quite going to put him in that same spot just yet. But what JJ Bleday did in his junior season was downright absurd. I mean, he hit as many home runs in one season as Kjerstad did in multiple seasons, and Bleday has not shown any of that power at the professional level. Of course, I can't use that against Kjerstad, but just want to see more. And sometimes college numbers for guys like that don't always translate in the power department when we see them start swinging with Wood at the professional level. I still have a lot of hope that Kjerstad will come back strong and look solid. The video that he put back swinging again looked like the normal Kjerstad. You wouldn't know that he was dealing with an issue, a very serious health issue, the time prior for a very long time, almost a year, since we'd really seen him swing at all over that last year plus. Obviously, we didn't see a lot of people swing in 2020, but just no video or anything of Heston Kjerstad, given that he was very much stuck at home for a while. So glad to see him healthy enough to be swinging the bat and on the mend. Best wishes to Kerstad, and I hope that he continues to head in the right direction and get back on the field, because of course health is the most important first and foremost, and this kid has a lot of years ahead of him on the baseball field and just in life. So looking forward to seeing what he's going to do this coming year. Coming in at number 8 is somebody that, as I started to dive into this system, I really am excited about. This is going to be one of those guys that I'm probably going to annoy you about over the next few months, because I just loved everything I saw from this kid, Connor Norby. He was a second round pick in this year's draft, and I think one of the steals of the draft out of East Carolina University. So much talent coming out of that school, by the way. You look at Gavin Williams, who came out in this year's draft as well. Norby in the draft. Also, Alec Burleson, who has come on the pod and been interviewed in the past. Definitely go check out that interview. He was one of my favorite guys that we've had on the podcast. ECU just churns out talent, and they are so much fun. But to talk about Connor Norby here, this is a very sound, well-rounded player that fits the mold of so many of the hitting prospects in this system. It's so obvious and tangible what the Orioles are looking for in their hitting prospects, and I love this approach. I really do love the approach. While Norby may not have as much power potential as some of the other guys in the system, he still fits the mold of really good feel to hit, simple approach, simple swing, and a lot of the things that you can't teach hitters. Just a good feel for the strike zone and a hit tool that could project as plus. Norby still has potential to hit for above average power, and that is enough for me to love him as a hitter because I believe in the hit tool that much. And again, it's just a consistent thing across this Orioles system that really is making me bullish on their likelihood of converting a lot of these guys into above average big leaguers. And that's exactly what I think Connor Norby can be. Plus hit tool is what I have on him. Obviously not yet, but projects as a plus hit tool. And he showed that through his explosive 2021 season, in college at ECU. The big question was how much power was he going to hit for? And he finally tapped into that power in that junior season. He launched 15 home runs while slashing a ridiculous 415, 484, 659. I'll be honest, I didn't get to see too much of him before I really dove into the system, other than the Super Regionals, or the Regional it was, I believe, where he faced Vanderbilt. I got to see him get some at-bats against Jack Leiter, against Kumar Rocker, and he put together some phenomenal ABs against both of them. Super comfortable, his takes were easy, and that's a big thing for me. You can just tell how comfortable a guy is, how well he sees the ball, by his takes. Even against Jack Leiter's electric stuff in that outing, his takes were really comfortable, and he put a good swing on the ball against him as well, I believe launching a double or something into the gap, had some good at-bats against Kumar Rocker as well. What he does too is he knows he doesn't have the kind of power where you can miss a baseball and it gets out. He does know that he has above average power though when he is really looking to do damage and when the pitch is in the right spot. And so he leverages his hitter's counts really well. Another guy that his hit tool really gives a little bit of a bump to the power. So the 45 grade on his power potential and or game power potential is not the same maybe as another 45 grade, because he is able to hit more frequently, which in turn means more home runs, and he's able to leverage his hitters counts better, which means more home runs. So while the physical presence isn't quite there compared to some other players, I think he can put up similar power numbers to guys with 50, maybe even 55 game power, because of how frequently he's going to hit and because of how well he leverages his hitters count. 21 years old still, had as good of a debut as you could want in low A, hitting 283, 413, 434 with the slash line. He had three homers and a strong 0.75 K to BB rate, which is something that I think he's going to consistently do. He's going to walk a lot. He's not going to strike out that much. High floor, going to get on base, above average speed, good defender. I love his hands at second base. Super smooth there. Above average defender there, no doubt about it. And an average to above average runner as well. Well-rounded player. Not much else to say there about Connor Norby other than I really like the high floor. Only a 12% K rate in his entire college career. Reinforced that with a low K rate in his professional debut and a high walk rate. All good stuff there. And the other thing, the last thing I liked about him too, that really stood out to me in terms of how he's able to let it eat in the hitter's counts, and then when he gets into a pitcher's count, when he's behind, he's able to still go into defense mode and put together a productive at-bat. He adjusts his approach a little bit too. He goes from a little bit more of an aggressive even though it's quiet earlier in the count, to spreading out wider with two strikes and really just going for the fungo approach. He has enough bat speed to do it, but he widens out his base with two strikes and just throws his hands at the baseball, and it works for him. So all around, really good prospect, really high floor player that could be an above average regular at second base. And especially in Baltimore, I think that power is really going to play up a little bit. 15 to 20 home run potential if he really taps into everything, and the ability to hit 280, get on base at a high 300s clip and a really good year, and a similar profile to Jonathan India with a better glove. That's really what I see here with Connor Norby. I'm going to get to 9 and 10 in this system, as well as some honorable mentions in just a moment here. But before I get there, a reminder that this episode is brought to you in part by DirecTV Stream. This might sound familiar to you, but you have one device that lets you catch the game live, then another device that lets you stream your shows, and then another one that lets you watch sports highlights, then you maybe have your phone, you have your neighbor's best friend's login for some other stuff you want to watch, and it's just haphazard. I can't remember all my passwords, and I'm too lazy to put them all in my notes, and there's just so many different places to go for so many different things. Well, I want to tell you about a simple way to get all of the entertainment you love without the hassle, and a great way to get your TV together. It's called DirecTV Stream, and it brings your live TV and on-demand favorites together like never before. So you can watch your favorite sports, movies, and shows all in one place. That means no juggling remotes, no need to buy another device ever again, and the best part, there's no annual contract. You can get rid of the clutter, get rid of the confusion, and get your TV together with DirecTV Stream. You can learn more at DirecTV.com. That's DirecTV.com. Compatible device required. Content varies by package. Also brought to you in part by our friends at Built Bar. Built Bar has so many delicious flavors. There's something for everyone, whether you like coconut, cherry barcia, raspberry, mint brownie, double chocolate, salted caramel, strawberry, orange, cookies and cream, or German chocolate. There is no wrong answer. My personal favorite, though, right now is mint brownie, as it has been for a while. But the best part about Built Bars is they are all low in calories, low in sugar, low in fat, low in carbs, high in protein. What else could you want from a protein bar? Covered in chocolate, easy to chew, great for a keto diet, all between 130 and 180 calories. And if you order today and use the promo code LOCKED15, that's LOCKED15 at Built.com, you'll get 15% off your next order. Built Bar is also the official protein bar of the U.S. track and field team. So if you go to Built.com and use the promo code LOCKED15, that's LOCKED15, you'll get 15% off your next order at Built.com. So let's get into 9, 10 honorable mentions and a little bit of Arizona Fall League updates right now on the second half of this podcast. And we got to start with somebody that is super, super intriguing because he's the one, the single prospect that defies the general outlook and general profile of the rest of the prospects in this system, because he's a little bit more volatile, but I also think not as volatile as some may think or as the surface level numbers may suggest. But it's Kyle Stowers, 23-year-old outfield prospect, of course, in this Orioles system, reached AAA this year, 6'3", 200 pounds, a very sweet left-handed swing that is no doubt just aesthetically pleasing when he connects, similar to how Cody Bellinger's swing is aesthetically pleasing when he connects. But the big thing there is when he connects. And there was some inconsistency throughout the minor league career leading into this season for Kyle Stowers in the department of just frequently making contact. He's a very good athlete. Even though he's a little bit long-legged and lanky, he is just explosive with the lower half. I mean, just ridiculously explosive. And when it's all synced up, when it's all working together, you can see a really exciting, potentially big league hitter when it's all working together. But when it's not working together, you see some ugly swings. You see some big swings and misses and pitches that sometimes he's not even close to. I thought that there was a lot less of that this year, and I liked a lot of what I saw in his ABs, especially down the stretch, as against some of the best pitching prospects in baseball and against some former big leaguers in AAA that are more polished, I saw much better ABs all around from Kyle Stowers, including a home run that he hit Oppo off of Shane Boz that was just spectacular. But overall on the season, across three levels, because he showed enough for the Orioles to say, hey, we can move him up to Double A, and then enough for them to say, hey, let's move him up to Triple A, and now he's in the Arizona Fall League. But across those three levels, 278, 383, .514 slash line, 27 home runs this year, a 141 WRC plus. What really stood out to me and gave me a lot of confidence is he seems like the type of player that is going to keep that strikeout rate in the low 30s no matter what level he's at. So you could put him in low A, and I still think he's going to strike out a decent amount, but you could put him in triple A, and he's still going to hold his own. So there's just a level of swing and miss that's always going to be in his game. But he's a rare outlier that even though he's striking out 30% of the time in high A, he's still only striking out 30% of the time in triple A too. He showed that this year. And in fact, his strikeout rate actually normalized a bit more and dropped a little bit once he got to triple A, and especially over the last few weeks of the season. I think he benefited from a smaller strike zone. He knows the strike zone better than some may think. It's just sometimes a swing and miss with his timing and a little bit of over-aggressiveness when he starts to get into those funks of swings and misses. But overall on the season, you combine all three levels, 32% K rate. You can deal with that with the power that he's able to provide. And he hedges that with a solid walk rate that was consistent across all levels, especially still consistent in AAA against pitchers who have much better command. I really liked that his numbers were steady in all categories as he got up to the highest level, and how he actually was more patient and took advantage of the tighter strike zone and looked for his spots a bit better. He knows where he's able to do damage. He knows where he's going to have some holes in his swing, but he's not going to give into those holes and try to get on those pitches until he has to when he's behind in the count. So it seemed like he had a much better understanding of who he is as a hitter and was much more comfortable in his ABs. The other thing that makes me pretty bullish on Stowers compared to maybe others is that he has really consistent splits. In fact, he's actually, this year at least, was better against left-handers than he was against right-handers. And remember, he's a left-handed hitter who has some swing and miss concerns. Typically, those guys really struggle left on left. But his K rate against southpaws was actually 26%. And a lot of times, you can't even teach guys to hit left on left. If they can't do it, they can't do it. I think that you can teach Stowers to get more comfortable right on right, and it seems like it's more just the velo up, as he's a guy that has some of that upright stance, a little bit of moving parts, and at times just gets a little steep. That's the one thing that I think he just needs to work on, and it's not as much of an issue left on left. He shows that he can keep his weight back, he can stay behind the baseball a lot better than he used to, and I think that's made evident by his 26% K rate against left-handed pitching and 951 OPS against left-handed pitching. Numbers against righties, a little bit more swing and miss, OPS a slight bit lower, but still really strong, and I would actually take that. I think that's really good for his outlook in terms of becoming an everyday player, and it's obviously easier to teach a lefty how to get more comfortable against righties than left on left, so that is a good long-term outlook for his ability to be an everyday player. As for the defensive side of things, I really like the routes he takes and the jumps that he gets on baseballs. More on the jumps, because he's an above-average runner, but he makes really good reads. I was watching just even running it back on some video that I saw, the second contact was made, he gets quick jumps and really just great closing speed on the ball. When he needs to kick it in gear, he can kick it in gear. I think he's capable of playing center field if he really needs to and has a chance to stick there because of the jumps that he is able to get on the baseball and because of the sneaky above average speed that he has. He makes long strides and closes in on the ball pretty well and tracks it well. He would be an above average defender in the corner. I think he'd be closer to average in center, but a power-hitting left-handed bat in center field is pretty exciting, and that could be something that he ends up doing. Worst-case scenario, he moves to a corner, and he's an above-average to plus defender, I think, in either corner, and moves well enough and has the arm and obviously has the bat profile to stick there. He's definitely the most volatile hitter in this top 10, probably. The only other guy would be who's next, and I don't think he's as volatile in his outlook or in his profile, more so just the fact that he's 19, which is Kobe Mayo, who's coming up. But in terms of his long-term outlook, if it all clicks for him, he can be as good as any hitter in this system not named Adley Rutschman. I mean, if it all really clicks for him with the power, the above-average speed, and the power to all fields that he's demonstrated, he really has as much upside as anybody if it all clicks. But if it all clicks is a big question because there is still some swing and miss. I believe he's punched out 6 times in 12 ABs, or 12 plate appearances, excuse me, in the Arizona Fall League. So we'll have to see on a larger scale how he does there. But overall, I think it was a really encouraging 2021 campaign. He has only boosted his stock as a prospect, and I'm definitely watching him moving forward. He's a guy that could play his way into a potential call-up next season. And if he can be somebody that ends up being a regular for them in the outfield, that really helps the long-term outlook of this Orioles team and would be a nice little bonus for them. And he somewhat fits the timeline of some of these other prospects as well. last prospect here on the top 10 before I get into a couple honorable mentions. And then, of course, a little bit of an Arizona Fall League update. Kobe Mayo, as I mentioned earlier, another player, South Florida guy, who went to Marjorie Stoneman Douglas, same high school as Anthony Rizzo, same high school as Jesus Luzardo, Colton Welker. A lot of really good talent has come out of there, and of course, plenty of talent out of South Florida. Mayo was a fourth-round pick in 2020. Part of the savings from Kerstad was used for Westberg and also used for Mayo because he was well overslot in the fourth round, more of a second-round value there for the 6'5", 190-pound third baseman. And I believe Fangraphs has already relegated Mayo to right field. When you look at their write-ups or their prospect rankings, I don't remember. I haven't looked at their Orioles top prospect rankings in a while, ironically, but I do believe that I remember seeing them have him as a right fielder, which it's a little early for that because I actually think that his actions at third are pretty strong. He moves really well for a 6'5" third baseman. 6'5", 190, has room to add some strength. His arm is really strong, and his actions are strong for how big he is, and that's the same thing that's echoed at the plate. I was shocked at how well he controlled his body for a 19-year-old who is 6'5", but his swing was actually really smooth, repeatable, and his lower half was way more under control than I thought. I went back and looked at some video of high school where there was a little bit more going on there. He has quieted things down, surprise, surprise, and has made things really simple for himself. And that's what he's able to do. Like, that will work for him, and he will still hit for power because he's 6'5", 190. He's going to add strength. He already has a pretty effortless ability to lift the ball and get carry on it. And he really is able to get easy extension by going short to long, and it allows him to backspin baseballs, and they just carry out of the yard. 26 low A games this year, he slashed .311, .416, .547. That is fantastic for somebody that's really just getting their feet wet in pro ball and somebody that has some concerns about his hit tool. At least that was some of the question when he was going into the draft. Now I see a potential 55 on the hit tool because of how well he is able to control his body and his barrel. He was making adjustments between pitches, able to get to high pitches that were high on velo, and able to adjust when he swings and misses at a breaking ball low, laying off it the next pitch. Those are things that you don't really see from a big 19-year-old kid, and I really do expect to see 30-plus home run upside if it all works out for him with the way that he is able to repeat his swing, with the physical frame that he has, and with the bat speed he already possesses. His swing mechanics are way ahead of his years, and then you also incorporate the fact that he should already be a little bit more awkward given that he's 19. With long limbs, he doesn't show it, and I really like that type of outlook for him. Dare I say there are some Alec Bohm similarities, but I think a little bit more power. Bohm's problem is he struggles to consistently impact the baseball. He makes a lot of contact, but doesn't impact the baseball enough. And now I think he's trying to do it too much, which has just gotten him out of his approach that worked so well for him. And I could go into a whole episode on Bohm. I'm sure I will at some point this offseason. There's some similarities there on the positive side, and that is a very good endorsement for a kid that's 19 that only has played 26 games in low A. I really like what I saw from Mayo. There's obviously some risk there, as you have with any overslot high schooler, big kid that's a bit raw, but he is way more polished than I thought he would be heading into this year, and a really good outcome. I could see a hybrid between a Ryan Mountcastle and an Alec Bohm here, where there's more power than Alec Bohm, like Mountcastle has, is a big, tall, lanky guy. They're both a bit positionless, as Bohm is not a great third baseman. Mountcastle is not really good anywhere you put him. But Mayo has that feel to hit that Bohm possesses as a big, long, lanky guy, but a more patient and, I would say, more sound approach than a Ryan Mountcastle, who has that power that I think is similar, that it's not just absolutely pulverizing the baseball 24/7, but sometimes it's just easy lift and carry that gets out of the yard. Don't get me wrong, Mountcastle squares up baseballs and so does Mayo, but it's sometimes just the fly balls that carry out of the yard that remind me a little bit of each other there. Some other names to watch: Kyle Bradish, your classic. I had this written down in the write-up, which of course is linked in the description. Your classic, quote unquote, saw his stuff tick up at the alternate training site guy, because I feel like I've said that so many times, but yet another guy that did that. Some mechanical adjustments helped his fastball bump to 93 to 95, touching 96, but he's also a natural deception guy, hard to pick the ball up out of his hand. I was watching from the vantage point of home plate, definitely difficult and gets on you quickly. Secondaries can use some refining, but the slider flashed above average. The changeup was average, and that gives him at least enough there. I think you've got the average changeup. on top of a pretty solid above average slider. Worst case scenario, could be a good bullpen guy, but I expect him to be a back end of the rotation starter with his mix of pitches, with the improving command, and just the way he's able to create that deception. Could be a nice little piece for them next year as they desperately, the Orioles, do look for some more pitching help. Another guy, Taron Vavra, another infielder who just puts the bat on the ball. When Taron Vavra came over in that trade for Michael Givens, which to this day I will never understand at all. Why were the Rockies trading for a 30-year-old reliever? It drives me insane. I know they're like the least well-run organization maybe ever, but you were a bad team and you traded two like decent prospects, nothing that's going to change a franchise, but they traded Taron Vavra and Tyler Nevin, guys that they could use right now, I would say, for a reliever that's 30, and then traded that reliever for less of a return than Taron Vavra and Tyler Nevin. So super bizarre, but back to Vavra, really polished hitter with a knack for getting on base. He walks as much as anybody in the minor leagues when he's really playing on a full season. 16% walk rate this past year, 388 on base in Double A before going down with an injury. He seems like the type of guy that you could definitely fill in and be an average regular who gets on base a ton and plays good defense. I see him as a super utility guy that grinds out at bats, can sneak into 400, 500 plate appearances a year because players always get injured. It's a long season. Good pinch hitter that grinds out at bats. All of a sudden, he's starting three games a week and he racks up a ton of ABs. I really see that him as that type of player. Should be big league ready next year. Again, good defense, above average runner, knack for getting on base, probably 10, maximum 15 home run power, but worth mentioning. Last guy that's worth mentioning in this honorable mentions area is Anthony Servideo. Servideo, I saw plenty of in the Cape, and he was a player that did not get to play shortstop as much as he should have because Gray Kessinger's presence at Ole Miss before getting drafted by Houston. So Servideo was playing all over. And he's actually a plus defensive shortstop. I saw that in the Cape. He's obviously a plus defender at second base. He's even good in the outfield. They had him playing all over at Ole Miss because they just wanted him in the lineup, and he was one of the few players that was capable of playing all over. That said, he really got to put his skill set on display when he got to play shortstop at Ole Miss full time before the season was canceled in 2020. In those 17 games, we really got to see how he could pick it already at shortstop beyond what we saw on the Cape, but he put it together offensively too. He hit more homers in those 17 games than he had in his entire college career prior, and showed that he's a true shortstop as well. Patient hitter, he's difficult to strike out, puts the ball in play, similar to Taron Vavra, except a good defender at shortstop. Has a chance to be an average shortstop, everyday player if he can hit enough. I think he showed some good things at the plate in his first professional stint, but if I was going to bet on it, I would probably say that he is a really good defensive utility man at the next level. There's just maybe not enough there offensively, but I think he did show a lot, and somebody that you want to see him be a little bit more aggressive, but that's also not his game, and he gets on base and you don't want to see him try to do too much and get away from who he is. So it's a tough little juggle there, but still a very high floor prospect and a good little piece there for the Orioles in the back half of their top 20 is probably where I'd put him. Very quickly, just wanted to give a little bit of an Arizona Fall League update because there's some significant prospects that I want to talk about here that I was really amped on before, and am just even more amped on as we've seen them through the fall league, because this has been one of those years where you had a lot of players injured, missing time, and other players that didn't play in 2020 and are pretty gassed, but their team decided they needed more ABs. So after a full season, they're now out in the Arizona Fall League facing some arms that are fresh that missed time this year because they were injured, and that's a difficult matchup there. But that hasn't fazed one guy who was a guest on the podcast and now leads the Arizona Fall League in hits. He is so legit, and I think that everybody really needs to start coming around to this guy. He's not going to give you a choice because he's going to just keep hitting and hitting and hitting and hitting, and I won't delay it anymore. Joey Weimer. Joey Weimer cannot stop hitting. 8 games, 11 hits, 1 homer already, 4 walks, 5 Ks, and this is as much talent as I've seen in the Arizona Fall League. He has been spectacular, and Joey Weimer, unorthodox, plays like his hair is on fire. But if you haven't heard that interview, by the way, not that long ago, just a couple weeks back, please go check out that Joey Weimer interview. I'm telling you, one, he's really interesting. He's soft-spoken, but he's a man of few words, but at the same time, he says a lot. I know that's super cliche, but he talks about how he would hit some of the hardest ground balls you would ever see, like crazy exit velos in college on the ground balls. And you wouldn't know that because you look at the numbers and he just doesn't show a ton of power at Cincinnati. But that makes sense because he was hitting it on the ground. He made some adjustments that really helped him get the ball in the air. And he's like, whoa, well, now I'm hitting it 110 miles an hour in the air. Those are going to leave the yard. And that's exactly what happened. And he's just been absurd. I don't really know how else to describe it. Another player who I saw in person over in South Bend, and I was really intrigued by, I started asking a lot of players. I talked to some players that faced him. I talked to some of his teammates, and I was like, tell me more about Nelson Velasquez. He just looks the part. He's got a big league body. He's got a presence at the plate. He's got an explosive swing. He had a good overall season this year. There was a little bit of ups and downs once he got promoted to Double A, but his numbers normalized and he ended up finishing really strong in Double A. 938 OPS in 34 games, hit 8 home runs there, had 12 home runs in High A. So 20 home runs between the two levels in 103 games, slash 270, 333, 496. Very aggressive approach. I do want to see that toned down a little bit, but that's why he's in the Arizona Fall League, where right now he's hitting 370, 7 walks against 11 strikeouts and 34 plate appearances. Really good showing so far from Velasquez. Austin Wells, another guy who I've talked about, who I saw in the Cape a lot. Really good hitter, and I'm very excited to see what he's going to do this coming year. A name to watch that could potentially be on the top 100 list by the beginning of next year. He's been that good. Curtis Meade, my guy, continues to rake. We have him way up there in the 50s on our top 100 prospect list because of how good he is. I think that it's only a matter of time where people start coming around to him as well. On the pitching side of things, real quickly, before we end this one, Cole Henry has been fantastic. Another arm that the Nationals drafted in 2020. Cade Cavalli, Cole Henry, both big-bodied right-handers with a good feel to pitch. And man, he was great this year in 47 innings, punched out 70. And now in the Fall League, 5 innings so far this year, he's punched out 10 and he's walked 3. Cole Henry, nice pitch mix, electric fastball, definitely a name to watch. Landon Knack, another player who had a great year and has been doubling it down in the Arizona Fall League. I like what I've seen from him. Hans Kraus, he's been a little bit inconsistent in terms of limiting the contact, but I have loved the swing and miss stuff that we've seen from him in the Fall League from some of the clips that I've seen. I can't wait to get out there and watch him throw because the stuff is nasty. You just need to harness it. There's definitely some bullpen risk. Still only 22, though. It's easy to forget that he's still only 22 and has shown some good stuff also. Ace Lacy, still the question to command. I'm going to talk about him when I release our top 10 Royals prospects for JustBaseball.com, which is going to be one of the next systems I do here. Again, his stuff has just looked fantastic, but harnessing it has been still a bit of a struggle for him through his limited innings in the Arizona Fall League, where he can experiment a bit more. Let's see him start to use those secondaries. I couldn't believe how much he threw his fastball this year when I was able to attain that data. More than 75% of the time, I believe, or roughly 73 to 75% of the time, he was going to that heater. And if he was behind in the count, it was almost a guarantee he was throwing the fastball. So we want to see a little bit more confidence and command there with the secondary stuff. And then Slade Ciccone, a guy that I had been mentioning for a while, struggles to avoid the contact at times, but also gets a lot of swings and misses. He's got a high spin fastball that he trusts, sometimes trusts it too much. And I'm liking what I'm seeing, though, with the development of the secondaries, especially in this more controlled, less important setting here in the Arizona Fall League. That'll do it for today's episode. Going to talk a lot about the minor leagues as a whole the rest of this week. I've got the minor league all-star team that I'm looking forward to discussing also. Basically featuring all of the best prospects this year for me at each position. That'll be a very fun episode as well. So looking forward to talking about that. Royal system, some other farm systems coming up as well. Obviously player interviews on top of that. As always, thank you for listening, and I look forward to talking prospects with you tomorrow.